Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, it's great to have you along. Welcome to a Monday here on the program. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls, Chris is at the phones, and we're looking forward to a great hour ahead. We have Faith Radio. Our focus is on relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching, helping to connect faith to life every day. And, Ted, we've got some of the best teachers and programmers, I think, anywhere up and down the dial, all across the country.
We really do. We're really blessed to have such great teaching and presentation here on the station. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Well, today we do have a wonderful opportunity to talk with one of our programmers who you hear regularly. I hope that you make it a point to listen to Family Life Today, heard each weekday morning at 10:30 Central Time, 11:30 Eastern. And coming up on today's program, we're going to visit with the president and co-founder of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, who is going to be with us. And we're going to talk about, he's written more than two dozen books, but one of the more recent ones, just a short little book, but it's packed. It's called Choosing a Life That Matters, Seven Decisions You'll Never Regret. And I want to find out more about that. So let's just jump in.
I love it. Let's do it.
All right. Dennis Rainey, as we mentioned, president, co-founder of Family Life. You hear on the broadcast each and every day here on Faith Radio. And he and his wife Barbara have written a lot of books, and of course best-selling ones like Moments Together for Couples and Staying Close, and well, there's a long list of things that we could talk about from Dennis. But he graduated Dallas Theological Seminary, and of course they host marriage conferences, men's ministries, parenting, and we're just excited to have him on with us today. And Dennis, we're just talking before the show, this is kind of a short little book, but it's packed with some great things, and in fact, I know people like Eric Metaxas thought it was significant as well.
Yeah, it's great to be with you, Neil. Metaxas, I sent Metaxas a picture of his book, Bonhoeffer, which is over 600 pages, 200,000 words, weighs a pound and a half, and I sent him a picture of his book and my book side by side, and my book weighs 5 ounces. And has 120 pages or so. And Metaxas, on air, a live broadcast, had the nerve to refer to my broadcast as a postage stamp. And we had a good time with that on air. Yeah. I said, yeah, my book is for all the people who started Bonhoeffer but never finished it. My book is an easy read. You can read it an hour and a half, 2 hours. And yeah, it's a great book because it talks about the most important relationship we have on the planet, our relationship with God.
Mm. Well, welcome to the program, by the way. It is great to have you on, and we so appreciate your daily ministry through the broadcast and all that Family Life represents. And congratulations, happy, 25th anniversary, just, a week or so ago, right, for the broadcast?
That's exactly right. We were at the Museum of the Bible and celebrating our 25th anniversary, the silver. And Bob and I are continuing on. I don't know if we're going to go for the gold or not. That's 50. I don't think our listeners want to hear what I'll be saying 25 years from now. Maybe. I don't know. I really don't. But it's been a privilege to be on stations all across the country, connecting with people around the most important relationships we have in life, our relationship with God, spouse, and our children. And I think people are looking for help and hope biblically, and we've tried to offer that, Neil.
Yeah. You know, this little book came about, as I understand, because you had a speaking opportunity, Choosing a Life That Matters, Seven Decisions You'll Never Regret. Just give us a little idea of sort of trying to boil the Christian message down into something that would fit in a speech.
Well, I was asked to give the commencement address at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School and at their university. And I thought, what do you say to a group of graduating students that are graduating after having studied the Bible for 2, 4, 6, 8 years, some of them getting PhDs? And I thought, what do you say after they already know it all? So I began to pray about it. And I thought, I just don't want to give a commencement address. I'd like to give them something that truly would be beneficial. And as I prayed about it, I was just impressed by beginning to think about the idea of relating to those students around what I'd learned about my walk with God over the past 40 years. And so I began to jot down some of the commands of Scripture that are kind of essence commands. And I came up with seven. And Neil, it was interesting. Every one of the commands was mirrored by an opposite warning. And so I came up with these seven, and this became my message. I didn't set out to have seven. I just found the seven that I felt like God had taught me from the Scriptures and gave it to him. So here are the commands and the warnings. Number one, seek God, not sin. Number two, fear God, not men. The next one, love God, not the world. Believe God, not the deceiver. Obey God, not your feelings. Number six, worship God, not comfort. And number seven, serve God, not self. And I had that printed on a little business card and gave each of the students at the seminary who were graduating and each of the college students who were graduating from that institution. And I gave them a laminated card that had those seven non-negotiables printed on it. And that was my graduation gift to them along with the message. And then I was asked by another seminary, Dallas Theological Seminary, to speak at their commencement. And I thought, you know, I think I'm going to give the same message, but polish it up a bit more. And after I gave the message, Neil, I sat down next to the president of Dallas Seminary, Mark Bailey, and he just leaned over and he said, that needs to be a book. Mm-hmm. Now, I give a lot of messages across the country and speak a good bit and have over the past 47 years. I don't have a lot of people who have PhDs leaning over after I've finished speaking, saying to me, you really ought to put that in print. And so that was 7 years ago. I went to work on it, and we've done it in a small little book called Choosing a Life That Matters, Seven Decisions You'll Never Regret. And a lot of people, in fact, I just got a note this morning from a lawyer in Chicago who just read my book, and he said, this kept me awake. It really caused me to think about my relationship with God. This is a meaty little book. And so the book that Eric Metaxas called a postage stamp has got a lot of good material in it that I think is going to help a lot of people.
Indeed. Well, you know, I thought it was interesting that, you know, as you talk about getting to the heart of what God expects of us, that it's centered on decisions and choices, not just asserting a set of beliefs. I mean, we're Christians are pretty good at just, you know, learning more theology.
Neil, you're on target there. I call a lot of Christians, those who are near believers. They have near beliefs, not truly convictions that move from the head to the heart, most importantly, to the soles of their feet. And I think in this culture today, as never before, we need people who know what they believe. They've got their theology right, but they know how that theology translates into real life. And we're not going to always do it right, perfectly, but we need to be transforming our lives, see God at work, changing our lives, and we need to be passing that on, Neil. I am more passionate about this than ever before. We must be passing on our experience of the truth of God and God's work in our lives to our children and our grandchildren. When we don't have an experience of God, we're passing on dogma and doctrine that is divorced from real life. And I think this is the reason why a generation of young people are leaving the church today, because their parents or their grandparents who taught them about God didn't live it, didn't experience him, didn't have a statement with their children saying, you know, last week God was pursuing me, and I just want you don't know, I'm going to pursue you as my son, my daughter, because God's been pursuing me. Let me tell you how he did that last week, how he convicted me of something. That's a living faith. And I think as never before, Neil, we've got to have believers who don't have near beliefs, but they have convictions that ultimately change our behavior and the way we live.
We're going to talk about how we can change our behavior as we dive into Dennis Rainey's book, Choosing a Life That Matters, Seven Decisions You'll Never Regret. And we do have a copy to give away here at the top of the hour. I want to just encourage you to sign up for that with a phone call at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. It may be that this is the book that can really just give you a redirect as you head into the new year. We're not that far from 2018. Let's choose a life that matters for as many days as God gives us. Dennis Rainey, president, co-founder of Family Life. The organization began back in 1976. They've had 25 years of radio broadcast. You hear him daily with Bob Lapine each morning here on Faith Radio. And he's with us today on the broadcast as we talk about choosing a life that matters. And there's more to come just ahead.
I called out his name. I'm following Jesus now, and he knows the way. I made up my mind. I'll leave it behind. No turning back. No turning back.
Now we're coming to the end of the year, and you may be looking back and say, you know, I could have made some better choices this past year, or maybe the past years. We're talking about the seven decisions you'll never regret. That's the subtitle of Dennis Rainey's book called Choosing a Life That Matters. And I hope all of us at our heart really want that. We want to choose a life that matters. Well, Dennis, in putting the book together, has come up with seven decisions you'll never regret. And number one that we're going to jump into is seek God, not sin. I should just mention you, of course, here, Dennis, on Family Life each weekday here on Faith Radio. And Dennis, say a bit more about this first signpost, because it does remind us that we live in a world that has an active enemy pursuing us.
Yeah, he is. And it's why repeatedly in the Old Testament and New Testament, the scriptures command us to seek God. The human heart was designed to seek something. The question is, what are you going to seek? Amos 5:4, the prophet Amos said, "For thus says the Lord to the house of Israel, seek me and live." I think what we don't realize, Neil, is that we're being sought out and sought after by sin ourselves. And I was reminded of this early in the formation of Family Life. Back in the early years, we couldn't afford to take our wives with us to the weekend to remember marriage getaways that we were having across the country. And I remember in Kansas City, at the end of Saturday, I had a nice meal and went up to my hotel room, propped my feet up, turned the TV on after I'd called Barbara and my family, and was watching a movie. And the phone rang. And I said, "Hello." And a woman's voice on the other end of the line, who wasn't my wife, said, "Hey, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm watching a movie." And she said, "Can I come up?" And I said, "I don't think that'd be a good idea." She said, "Why? I'd like to come up." And I said, "Well, there's two reasons. Number one, I fear God, and I have a great marriage, and I don't want to do anything to disappoint him or to destroy my marriage. I've got a family. I forget the time. I think we had four kids. I've got a family and a wife back in Little Rock, Arkansas, and happily married." And I said, "The second reason it's not a good idea for you to come up is the movie I'm watching is The Ten Commandments." And with that, I hung up. I had that happen one more time in Dallas at a conference, and this time my wife was with me, and I just hung up. But the next day at the conference, a woman came up to me at one of our Weekend to Remember marriage getaway. She came up and she said, "That was me on the phone last night that called you. My husband put me up to it. He wanted to see if you were the real deal." And if he hadn't been so far behind her, I don't know what I might have done to that guy. I mean, seriously, Neil, it's bad enough to have to struggle with your own sinfulness and selfishness without having somebody else set you up for a trap. Well, I think what we've got to do is we have to understand our hearts were made to seek God. So the question is, are you seeking Him with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind? And if not, what are you seeking? And if you're seeking something else, you just need to know you're settling for a counterfeit. God wants to have first place. He wants to be Lord. He is Lord, by the way. You may not recognize it if you're a listener right now, but He desires to have you surrender to Him. And I just want to tell you, that may make you nauseated as a listener to think about surrendering to God, to give up the rights to your life. It did for me. I remember when I did it and how I still continue to do it. It takes death to self, sacrifice. The psalmist talks about offering to God a sacrifice of thanksgiving. And when we seek God, we can offer that sacrifice of thanksgiving to Him. This is the beginning of life right here. Seek God that you may live, the prophet Amos said.
You know, I think as you address in the book, you know, how do we seek God? Because I think that maybe is a question many people have. And in fact, it's part of the book is at the end of each chapter. You have a section called Life Skill. And in this one, you suggest there's a word we ought to consider.
Well, maybe you need to remind me
pondering God.
You've got my book in front of you.
Sorry.
I've slept since I wrote this, Neil. Here's the point. And we'll get to the word ponder. It's a word from the book of Ecclesiastes. But A.W. Tozier said this: the most important thing about you is what you think about God. It is only as we think rightly about who God is, and you get that from the book, the best-selling book in history, the Bible. It is only as you think rightly about who God is that you can determine who you are, what your identity is, what your purpose is, what your mission in life is, and what your responsibilities are as a man, a woman, a husband, a wife, a mom, a dad, a grandparent, or maybe as a child. What does God expect of you? We are accountable to Him, and that's why seek God, not sin, is so important. And that's what led me to do a study a number of years ago, Neil, from the book of Ecclesiastes. And I noticed that in the book of Ecclesiastes, which, by the way, is a great book for our day, because the book of Ecclesiastes was written by the wisest man who's ever lived, who had mega wealth, tremendous options in his life. But in that book, there is a moment where he says, "Thus I pondered." And after he paused and thought and pondered, it was then that he came to grips with the right choices in life. He began to see life as it really is, which is a relationship with God and being obedient to Him. And all throughout Ecclesiastes, if you haven't read it recently, just read through there and notice when he said, "Thus I pondered, thus I stopped and thought." And he came up with an insight. What does God require of me? Well, He requires us to fear Him, it says, at the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And it calls us to give an account of our lives and to obey Him. That's the essence of finding life. And when you do that, I think you'll be able to turn away from sin more often and not nibble around the edges of it like we sometimes can do.
Well, part of that, I guess, involves the second principle, the second decision, that's fear God and not man. And I think we like to kind of nibble around the edges and dabble in sin, perhaps, instead of really fearing God.
Proverbs, which is a great book as well for our day, Proverbs 19:23 says, listen carefully to this: the fear of the Lord leads to life, and whoever has it rests satisfied. He will not be visited by harm. I'll tell you another story about a time I faced temptation, and I caved in. It was when I was taking my 10-year-old son, Benjamin, out into the woods where we live on a ridge overlooking a lake, and there was a tree that was taking my view. And I went down in the woods where that tree was and determined that tree was about 18 inches across my property line and onto the city's property line. In other words, it wasn't my tree. But I kept walking up on the deck and looking back out, and it was just really taking my view, Neil. So I thought, I'm going to get my chainsaw and just take down that tree. And I did, with my 10-year-old son watching. And I went back up on my deck, and I couldn't see the view. I expected to be satisfied with what I'd accomplished, but all I could see was a monument to my compromise lying on the forest floor, that tree that I'd cut down, and in front of my son. And did you know, it took me 2 months before I actually dealt with my error, with my sin. And what it took was, everywhere in the Bible that I would read, there were trees. I kept seeing trees every time I opened the scriptures. It was like God was nailing me. I mean, he was working me over, Neil. And I was going, God, you don't want me to call the city and offer to make restitution for a silly tree. There's millions of trees out here. They'll never miss it. Those property lines aren't that exact out here anyway, God. Yeah, I want you to call the city. Well, I didn't repent right away, Neil. You ever done that? Huh?
Yes.
Well, I didn't right away, but I finally did. And hang on 1 second here. My wife's calling, and I didn't tell her I was doing radio today at lunch. Anyway, I called the city, and I had my 10-year-old son, Benjamin, listening as I called, and I told the city manager what I'd done. I offered to make restitution or do whatever he wanted me to do with that, and that man patiently listened on the other end of the phone, and he said, you know, Mr. Rainey, property lines aren't that exact out there anyway, and I appreciate you calling, but keep moving. It's okay. And did you know I ultimately got permission to take some trees out that were getting my view later on? It was after I prayed about 10 years that God answered that one. But I think the fear of the Lord, Neil, is what turns us away from evil and causes us to choose what's right. The fear of the Lord is recognizing the awe of Almighty God and giving him his due, which is our obedience. And it's turned me from channel surfing alone in a hotel room. It's turned me from maybe grabbing a pornography magazine at a news rack. It's turned me away from evil and made me aware that God was there, God was watching, God was listening, and that I'm accountable to him.
We're talking about Choosing a Life That Matters, the title of a great little book from Dennis Rainey. The subtitle is Seven Decisions You'll Never Regret. And we're going to try and get through a few more of those decisions in the moments ahead. Dennis Gortz, president, co-founder of Family Life, a crew ministry, and you hear him daily on Family Life Today. He's with us today on Connecting Faith, and we're giving away a copy of the book at 877-93-FAITH. More with Dennis coming up. That's our challenge, the challenge before us, to stand strong for the Lord and these days. We live at a time in our culture when it seems like, you know, everything is permitted and people that don't stand for something fall for anything. Well, you want to know God more, you want to experience more of him, you want to have a fuller understanding of God's ways and purposes. Well, it comes in making right choices, and we're talking about it today with Dennis Rainey, founder of Family Life, Choosing a Life That Matters, the book we're referencing, Seven Decisions You'll Never Regret. And Dennis, one of the seven decisions you talked about is obeying God, not your feelings. And I don't know if you have the quote in front of you, but you quoted C.S. Lewis. It's one that I hadn't read before, and I just thought it was so pertinent for today's I think, challenging world. And as we've talked about, that, you know, it's easy to just sort of slip away and not stay strong in our faith.
Yeah, he talks about how it's the little decisions that make up our lives. And here's what he said. He said, good and evil both increase at compound interest. That's why the little decisions you and I make every day are of such infinite importance. The smallest good act today is the capture of a strategic point from which a few months later, you may be able to go on to victories you never dreamed of. On the other hand, an apparently trivial indulgence in lust or anger today is the loss of a ridge or a railway line or a bridgehead from which the enemy may launch an attack in our lives otherwise impossible. And I think what Lewis was just inviting us into is an evaluation of how we're making our decisions. Does Jesus Christ help us make those decisions? Is he the Lord of your life as you make those decisions? I like the statement that says the hinges are the doors of opportunity swing on the little hinges of obedience. You just don't know how a small decision today in your marriage can make a difference tomorrow and in your legacy and in future generations.
I think it's, you know, one of the things that you talk about is serve God, not self. And that, I mean, we live in a season, a time, a culture where self-sacrifice, you know, maybe we talk about it from time to time, but, you know, we're pretty comfort focused. And, you know, the self is, you know, elevated above all else, it seems like.
Well, I know this. Barbara and I made a decision the first Christmas we were married, 45 years ago, to relinquish the title of our lives to Almighty God and say to God, here we are with what little that we have, what little we have to offer, and we want to surrender that to you, and we want to symbolize that and formalize that by signing a title deed of our lives. And Neil, we did that on December 17, 1972. Mm. And that title deed remained in an envelope sealed for over 20 years. And then we opened it up and read what we'd given God, what we thought was important, and we both laughed. Mm. What we thought was important that first Christmas in 1972 was trivial compared to what God had given us. And I think the ultimate call of service of God is to surrender our lives in totality to Jesus Christ. In fact, this was at the core of discipleship. He said, no man can be my disciple unless he pick up his cross. He died a self and come after me on a daily basis. All of life beckons us to serve ourselves. It's why marriages are failing today, Neil. A number of years ago, we had an event that was held in major cities all across the country called I Still Do. And we called people to serve God and keep their marriage covenant. Divorce has become way too easy in our culture. And the Christian community, I believe, is complicit in so many people tampering with their vows. Our wedding rings don't mean anything. Or little today. And so at that event, we called people to keep their covenant, to keep their vows, and to say, I still do. And the way we ended the event was I was actually speaking, and I held up a rose, and I said, this rose represents a rose of reconciliation. If there's someone here who needs to come and get one of these roses, there were a couple of dozen roses at the base of my podium. If there's someone here in an audience of 10,000 people that needs to ask forgiveness of their spouse, come and get one of these roses. And I looked out of the corner of my eye, and I could see a guy who was hitting about every third step coming down from the top of this arena, all the way down out front in front of all these thousands of people, tugged and pulled at a rose and began to sprint back up those steps. And he met his wife, what looked like to be in midair, wrapping his arms around her, and I'm sure whispering what he needed to confess and ask her forgiveness. And I looked back down at the vase, Neil, and it was empty. So the next time we did this, we had an audience of 12,000 people. We had about 400 roses. They lasted about 3 minutes. We ended up having to purchase 1,000 roses at these events for an event of 10,000 people. And we would go through nearly all of those roses, 1,000 roses, of people who needed to square things away in their marriage and with the most important person they'll ever be committed to in a lifetime, their spouse. And I determined this, Neil. I determined that in our country, there's a lot of unfinished business between husbands and wives, that we need to always keep the closets clean, and we need to frequently be asking our spouse to forgive us when we offend them. So a question for our listening audience here this afternoon is, when's the last time you ask your spouse to forgive you? If you can't remember the last time, it doesn't mean you're perfect and haven't offended them. It just may mean that you're not practicing, in my opinion, one of the stickiest parts of the marriage covenant. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 32. We're to forgive one another as God in Christ has forgiven you. And forgiveness means you give up the right to punish another person. And when you ask for forgiveness, you come to them humbling yourself, admitting you've wounded them, and ask them to give up their right to punish you. I think this is the stuff of what keeps a marriage together over a lifetime. And it's why we're seeing a lot of covenants dissolved into divorce.
Good word today from Dennis Rainey, talking about the I Still Do conference and the Rose of Reconciliation. You also talk in the book, in one of the key decisions, Believe God, Not the Deceiver, about a rock of remembrance. Talk about why we should set up a rock collection.
Well, I think all of life is one long process of determining who you believe and what you believe. And Jesus warned us that there is a deceiver who wants you to be deceived into believing him and listening to his lies. But Jesus said there is no truth in him. And so at the point of faith, you take God at his word and you trust God and believe God. And I think when you see God answer that act of faith, answer that step of trusting him, I think we need to start a rock collection. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, in the Old Testament, when they saw God act, they built memorials. And the memorials were built out of stones, out of rocks. And it was said in the Old Testament that, so when your children ask you, Mom, Dad, what are these rocks here for? You can answer them and tell them this is when God stepped out of eternity and parted the sea and provided food and answered prayer on behalf of his people. Well, I think, Neil, there are those moments in every person's life listening to this broadcast where God has acted on his or her behalf. We need to start collecting these rocks, these milestones, so that we can remember that he is faithful. He will rescue us. He does answer prayer. The enemy wants to whisper in a listener's ear right now, God doesn't care. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't love you. And he wants you to just collapse into believing his lies. But God says in his word, and that's why we got to get into the book. It's why we've got to read maybe three or four Psalms a day out of the Old Testament, and also a proverb, a chapter of the Proverbs every day. Something that reminds us of the truth of who God is, so that we will not forget God, we will not forget what he's done, and we will not forget to trust him today when we face a temptation or a challenge or a test to our faith.
Only got a minute and a half or so left talking with Dennis Rainey today. Dennis is founder and president of co-founder of Family Life, and he's in the midst of a transition, stepping aside as the president here in just a few weeks. Talk a little bit about maybe this season in your life and what you're planning for the days ahead.
Well, Barbara and I have had the privilege of leading Family Life for over 41 years, and about a decade ago, I determined that by the time I finished my 70th year of life, I'd step out of the seat, because I feel like founders hang on too long sometimes. And so my 70th year, and that's happening, and we're passing the baton to a young man by the name of David Robbins. And Barbara and I are moving on to a new season. We're not retiring. I'll repeat that. We are not retiring. We are refiring. Mm. We got a new season of ministry, and that's caused both Barbara and me to look up and out to the world and go, how can we invest our lives for the rest of our lives for God's purposes? Acts chapter 13:36 says, and after David had served the purposes of God in his generation, he slept. I think the question for every listener is, are you a part of serving the purposes of God in this generation, in your generation? That's what we want to do, Neil. And you can count on us doing our best to do that, God willing.
Mm. Listen for Dennis Rainey along with Bob Lapine each weekday, 10:30 Central, 11:30 Eastern, here on Faith Radio. And check out the great work of Family Life. It's a crew ministry. They've got some wonderful resources, including this book, Choosing a Life That Matters, 7 Decisions You'll Never Regret. Dennis, so appreciate you. God bless you as you continue to find refire and find ways to serve the Lord.
Neil, you've done a good job running the race yourself. Thanks for serving faithfully.
We're honored to partner together. Great to visit with Dennis Rainey today. We do have a copy of the book to give away. We'll do that at the top of the hour. 877-933-2484 is the phone number. More coming up. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'd love the opportunity to connect with Lisa Marone on every other Monday basis. She provides a Monday morning health tip every Monday, for which you can sign up on her website, lisamarone.com. Lisa's a physical therapist, a professor, author, and speaker, years of experience in the healthcare field, and she's written some wonderful books on everything from back pain to headaches to overeating, and one of her great books more recently is called Get Healthy for Heaven's Sake. But she's also written about sleep, and I thought we'd talk about that today. And I promised that I wouldn't doze off during the conversation, Lisa.
Excellent. I'm glad that you got a good night's sleep so that we could do this on a good setting.
Well, it's a subject that we probably need to keep revisiting, because it is pretty sobering, the lack of sleep for so many of Americans, it seems like.
Statistically, Neil, 74% of Americans are sleep deprived. And if I had to judge that by my practice of patients, I would say that is true. And so one of the first things I'm asking my patients, whether they're here for back pain or headaches or what have you, is how many hours of sleep are you getting each night? And you would be surprised, Neil, that many people come in and report to me, I get about 5. And I say, well, that's about 2 to 3 hours too little. And so I begin to educate them about sleep, and it's so critical. There was a statement that I read a number of years ago by Dr. William Dement. He was a co-founder, Neil, of Stanford University's Sleep Center. And he said that there was plenty of compelling evidence that sleep was the most important predictor of how long you would live. Mm. That was more important than whether you smoked, whether you were overweight, but it was how much you slept. That was pretty sobering.
Boy. Well, and you mentioned that, when they come in to see you, they're coming in for back or neck pain. Is sleep related to any of those issues?
It absolutely is, Neil, because when we sleep, we go through different phases of sleep. Each 90 minutes, we actually move through a sleep cycle. And within that sleep cycle, we have light sleep and deep sleep and dream sleep. And during different phases of those sleep cycles, we have repairing that takes place of our bone mass. We have repairing that takes place of our nervous system, like how our brain gives messages to our muscles. And we have repairing of our muscles themselves. Specifically, when we're in dream phase of sleep, it's so remarkable. God has created us while we are dreaming that there are only three muscles that are functioning. The rest of our body is paralyzed. So we have our heart muscle that's pumping blood. We've got our diaphragm muscle that's helping us to breathe. And oddly enough, we have our muscles that control our eyeballs so we can watch our dreams go by. But we need that paralyzed state, Neil, because we have to repair and test the muscles, and we wouldn't want to be using those muscles while they're getting repaired. So, yeah, that absolutely not sleeping well breaks down the body.
I think we just don't realize how much impact it has. I'm curious, is there an age or stage maybe where sleeplessness is more common, or where, I guess obviously if we're busy, we're getting less sleep, but do you find that there's seasons?
Well, you know, there are seasons in life, like when we're younger, of course, babies are sleeping a whole lot more than a child is. Not my babies, but most babies did. Then we get into teenage years where we need about 10 hours of sleep, and our teens are completely sleep deprived. And then we move into adulthood where we need about 7 to 8 hours of sleep. And studies have shown if we get less than 7 hours as an adult or more than 8, we actually have shorter lifespans. So God has even crafted that 7 to 8 hour period. But certainly as you get older, and I'm going to say specifically women who are perimenopausal or menopausal, or even for some of the years following menopause, they're really having trouble hormonally maintaining and sustaining sleep. So, and then as we get older into our twilight years, you know, we're in our 70s and 80s, we're not needing as much sleep, so we're feeling a little bit fresher on 6.5 or 7 hours. Some of us, though, some of us are continuing to sustain a healthy sleep right through the days that God calls us home.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, that brings up the question then, if we're not getting enough sleep, what do we do to get a better night's sleep?
I think there's a few things, Neil. First of all, you have to really convince yourself that it's worth getting. You know, if you sleep one sleep cycle less, so during a 7 to 8 hour night's sleep, that would be 5 90-minute sleep cycles. So if you give yourself 20% less of that, then you have 20% increase in aging and disease production and weight gain and all different things. So we need to first convince ourselves, Neil, that this is worth getting. And then the second thing we have to do is actually determine to get it. So if you need to be up at 6 in the morning, then your lights need to be out and your head has to be on the pillow at 11 o'clock at night. So you get your full at least 7 hours of sleep. But then, Neil, what we need to do is we need to kind of ramp up to a good night's sleep. And actually, it's really ramping down. So some of us are going to be answering emails and watching exciting television and all that sort of thing right up until bedtime, and then we wonder why we don't sleep so well. So our bodies need to produce a chemical called melatonin. And melatonin is something that helps us not only to fall asleep, but it helps us to sustain our sleep and not wake during the middle of the night. And our bodies were created to make more melatonin as it gets darker. And so we didn't have a problem way back when before electricity because, you know, the sun went down, our melatonin was produced, and we woke up with the sunrise. But now we have this blue light in front of our eyes all the time with our computer screens and tablets and phones and all that. So we're really fighting against our own melatonin production.
Can we, melatonin's a wonderful supplement. Is it something that we should take regularly if we're having trouble sleeping, or is it better if we only use it as kind of emergency?
Yeah, that's a great question, Neil. First of all, I want to tell people that melatonin is not approved for your young children or even teens. So that's not something you want to be giving your kids to help them fall asleep or stay asleep at night. Just want to put that out there. Yeah. But for us adults, if you have done everything that's naturally possible to make your own melatonin production, that would be dimming your lights around your house at night. That would be maybe turning off the television an hour before you go to sleep, keeping your cell phone in the kitchen and away from you, and no televisions in the bedroom, that sort of thing. If you're still having trouble, then certainly Just clear that with your doctor that it's not going to interfere with any medications you might be taking. But melatonin would be great. But, Neil, I think the best way to use melatonin is if you happen to have a shift job where you're working different hours all the time and you need to get to sleep, or you happen to travel like my husband does a lot, time zone to time zone, country to country, and sometimes you're going to need that to help you maintain your good sleep.
So if we if we're not sleeping, do we get up or do we stay in bed?
Oh, that is a million-dollar question. So there are some people that would say, yeah, change your environment, get up and walk around. But what I believe is your body not only needs to sleep, but it also needs to rest. And all of our discs in our body and our muscles, they really need that lying down time. And so lying down on your bed, even if you're not sleeping, is helpful to the restoration of your physical body. And so I use that time when I have a night that sleep is really eluding me, I just use that time to pray. You know, it's really amazing that prayer is such a peaceful thing that oftentimes mid-prayer, I don't even realize it and I've fallen back to sleep. You know, God has just given us we might as well use the time for kingdom's sake and move some things around us spiritually while we're sitting there waiting to fall asleep again.
Yeah, that's a good word, and I've experienced the same thing as well. What about if you wake up tired, are you maybe dozing off at your desk, hopefully not on your drive, but is that a problem if we're napping in the afternoon to supplement?
Yeah, Neil, it's really important that if you're not sleeping well at night regularly, that you do not get in the habit of taking naps, because that is going to use up that melatonin store during the day. And we really need to be able to train ourselves that sleeping happens at that one-third of our day at nighttime. If you find that you wake up and you think that you had a good night's sleep, but you're yawning all the time, you know, you're at a traffic light and your head is nodding and you're in the lecture somewhere or in a meeting in the office and you can't keep awake, then quite possibly you're having something that's disturbing your sleep, like sleep apnea. You might ask someone who's in earshot of you, are you snoring? You're stopping and starting breathing? Because that is oftentimes a sign, Neil, that we're under-oxygenated throughout the night. And so we're just not getting the oxygen that we need.
And maybe just a final thought, is there foods make a difference in terms of getting a good night's sleep, things to avoid? Or maybe, you know, do we have the glass of warm milk before bed?
Yeah, another great question. Here's some things you don't want to have before bed. So within 3 hours before bed, you don't want to have a glass of wine or some kind of alcoholic beverage. That's going to disturb you from getting into your deep phases of sleep that are really helpful in healing and restoring your body. The other thing you don't want to do is have caffeine maybe more than 6 hours before you've gone to sleep. The other thing that can affect sleep is antihistamines, which people don't realize. And so if you're having trouble breathing and you're constantly using antihistamines, that also could be messing with your sleep. You might need to find some other solution to do that. But as for falling asleep, it's better not to be putting food in your body within a couple hours before sleeping, just because we're never going to burn off those calories. They're just going to stay with us. So better to get in the habit not to be doing something like that, or drinking that might wake you up with a heavy bladder in the middle of the night.
And that's a whole other topic that we'll talk about the 3:30 wake-up call. Lisa Verone writes a Monday morning health tip, and she's written a wonderful book called Sleep Well Again. I recommend it to you. You can find out more about her books and her speaking and her work and sign up for her Monday morning health tip on our website, lisamarone.com, lisamarone.com, and we get to visit with her every other Monday here on Connecting Faith. Lisa, great to visit with you, and thanks for some encouragement for us to rest well.
Absolutely, Neil. So important.
All right. Hopefully you didn't doze off during that conversation with Lisa, but some great advice. And, wow, great insight before that from Dennis Rainey. You're going to listen to that again, maybe pass it on to a friend. Check it out. We post the interviews on our website, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page. Tomorrow, timely topic, worry less, trust more. Robert Morgan is our guest on Connecting Faith tomorrow. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, You can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.